You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, May 10, 2017.
A lot of my comedy is political satire or social satire, or it has to do with things that affect us as black people or people of color.
We hear from local resident Rob Sherrell, the nation's first college graduate to earn a degree in stand-up comedy. We'll hear about his experience as a comedian and an activist here at Indiana University. That's coming up later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a phishing scam targeted at Google Docs on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The city of Bloomington says it spent more than $770,000 as it sought to annex about 10,000 acres of Monroe County land this year. The annexation process was abruptly ended late last month when the state legislature intervened. Before the annexation was called off, the city racked up $392,000 in fees at the Reedy Financial Group, a financial consulting firm based in Seymour. They also spent $200,000 on legal services from the Indianapolis-based Bose, McKinney & Evans firm. The communications director for the city, Mary Catherine Carmichael, says the companies were assembling necessary information.
Certainly research as far as what land would and would not be appropriate to propose to annex. It would be a financial review. It would be a parcel-by-parcel analysis that we then went ahead and made available to the folks in the affected areas. So quite a lot involved in that process, as you can imagine.
City officials have voiced frustration about the way the annexation was canceled. State lawmakers inserted an anti-annexation provision into the state budget bill just hours before the end of the legislative session, leaving no time for debate. State Representative Matt Pierce, who represents most of Bloomington, says he was not informed about the provision until just before the bill came up for a vote. Carmichael says the last-minute change has left the city wondering about its ability to exercise home rule.
It's very expensive to follow the process that they have laid out. We did that both in spirit and letter, and so then to have that just shut down without an opportunity to weigh in on that in any way. It's very discouraging and, leaves us wondering what next.
Many county residents have been upset about the city's plans to annex their properties. Some said the city had been too rushed in its efforts and didn't let the county know far enough in advance about the annexation proposal. Carmichael did say today that a portion of the city's expenses occurred before Mayor John Hamilton first announced his intention to seek the annexation. She said she didn't know exactly how much of the money was spent prior to notifying the public.
Ellettsville Town Council President Scott Oldham began the council's meeting Monday night by acknowledging the recent loss of two public servants.
Since last we met, we have lost two dedicated public servants in Ellettsville, and I want to recognize both of them. As most of you are aware, Councilman Diane Baston died, lost her battle with cancer just a short while ago. And we just lost Jack Baxter, who was a 46-year member of the Ellettsville Fire Department. So I just want to take a moment to thank both of them for their dedication and their public service, and quite frankly, to send our message of condolence to their families and to the community as a whole, because truly we have lost two very dedicated people who were vital to this town.
The town council went on to approve a 20-year contract with the City of Bloomington Utilities for water. Town attorney Darla Brown outlined the contract.
CBU proposes to sell water to the town of Ellettsville at a cost of $2.39 per 1,000 gallons, which is what is on file with regard to CBU's tariff with the IURC. The town agrees to purchase a minimum of 2 million gallons of water per month and a maximum of 46 million gallons of water per month. CBU will maintain the meters at its own expense. CBU will calibrate the meters at its own expense. If the town intends to challenge the meters, it can. If it turns out that the meter is working fine, the town pays the expense. If the meter's not working fine, CBU will pay the expense.
Ellettsville Utilities Manager Mike Farmer said the town currently uses an average of 840,000 gallons of water each day. Farmer said prior to making some infrastructure repairs, the town consumed as much as 1.5 million gallons per day. Oldham asked Farmer whether in time the town might bump up against the usage limit set in the contract.
I don't want to get some council 15 years now from now into a shape where they can't approve a business coming in or something like that that's water dependent and we get ourselves in a bind.
Yeah, I can't predict the future, but I'd have a hard time believing that we would ever need 46 million gallons in the next 20 years. But yeah, I just don't think it'll happen. I mean, and it's based on the average.
Council member Brian Mobley asked Brown about the potential for rate increases during the life of a contract.
For 20 years we signed this contract, is there price increases set in there?
There's language in the contract to the effect that if the City of Bloomington Utilities goes back before the IURC and obtains a rate increase, that increase will be passed along to the town.
As a rate
increase? Right, and not necessarily the same rate increase that the city would ask for, but in some way, shape, or form, that will be passed along to the town's customers.
The contract stipulates the town cannot buy water from another source except in the event of a drought or an emergency.
Monroe County Prosecutor Chris Gall has announced that a new pediatric forensic medical exam program has been established in Bloomington for examination of children who may have been victims of sexual abuse. Previously, any sexual abuse investigation called for children to be examined in Indianapolis, but lack of resources or transportation often imposed hardship on low-income families. A new local alternative addresses children who need a forensic medical exam regardless of their circumstances. The program is a collaboration between Riley Physicians for Children IU Help and Susie's Place Child Advocacy Center. Local physician Dr. Richard Malone of Riley Physicians will act as medical director of the program and conduct regular exams at Susie's Place in Bloomington. Malone says that such exams should be the standard of care for children involved in investigations. For more information, visit susiesplace.org.
Biology professors and graduate students from Ball State's Department of Biology have been placing collars on deer in the Bloomington area since 2013 to learn more about deer living in urban and rural areas. In a Herald Times article, Ball State graduate research assistant Jonathan Trudeau said that of the more than 40 deer that still have working collars around their necks, 24 are in Bloomington. They have both GPS tracking collars and long-term VHF tracking collars that monitor deer movement. After the current research study is completed, the GPS collars will be removed by remote release, while the more permanent VHF collars will continue to be monitored even after the study is completed in July. Those interested can learn more by visiting deerstudy.iweb.bsub.edu.
The Brown County Convention and Visitors Bureau is inviting people to the 15th annual Wine Fair this Saturday, May 13. Dozens of participating wineries will offer complimentary samples at the Story Inn in Story, Indiana. The fair has grown to be the largest event that exclusively features Indiana wines. There will also be concerts all day at the outdoor Story main stage. Only online pre-sale tickets will be honored this year. There will be no tickets sold at the gate. A free shuttle will be running from Eagle Park Baseball Field to the fair all day. For more information or tickets, visit IndianaWineFair.com. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithfield's home automation service is available at smithfieldsecurity.com.
On Monday, WFHB's Bring It On hosted a conversation with Rob Sherrill, who recently earned a degree in stand-up comedy from Indiana University. Sherrill designed the comedy major, and he is the first person to ever graduate with the degree. During the conversation, hosts Clarence Boone and William Jose talked with Sherrill about his experience as a comedian, an activist, and a black man attending a predominantly white institution. We bring you part of their conversation now for today's WFHB Community Report.
You have been very active in Indiana University, and we actually wanted to invite you on about a year and a half to 2 years ago, and it was on your 22nd birthday. Mm-hmm. Share with us what happened on your way to the station.
So if I remember correctly, the interview you wanted to conduct was about the racial climate around the Indiana University campus, around the Bloomington community, and really also touching on it nationwide as well. And I was riding one of those electronic scooters, people call them hoverboards. I was actually assaulted by two Caucasian individuals for no real apparent reason. They kicked me off my board, and what a lot of people knew at around the time was I was also previously injured. But when I was assaulted, I fell off, re-injured my shoulder again. While I'm sitting there on the ground, the two people were they were laughing and just carrying on, and I was looking around for people around me to help, and people were just kind of watching this whole thing go down. And so they got up and they walked away. I got up and I was faced with the decision to let it go, shrug it off, even though I really couldn't shrug because my shoulder was hurt. Do I call the police? Even though, around the time there's been given more and more visibility to the inability for police officers to effectively do their jobs when it comes to protecting the lives of people of color. Or do I just go on and continue on to the interview? I saw them walking away and something in me snapped. So I decided to get back on my hoverboard for a little bit and follow them. On the phone with the police, I was like, I'm not gonna let this slide. If I gave up, this is one more opportunity for someone, perhaps with malicious or prejudiced intentions, to get away with their actions. So, but I followed them for a block or two until they realized that I was following them on the board. So they started running, and I amped up the speed on my little board, and I'm trying to balance on the board and call the police and hold my arm at the same time. But unfortunately, they did get away. The police officers did show up. Shortly after they had ran off, I explained to them the story about what happened in the assault. I gave a brief description of what the assailants looked like, and I continued on my way to the interview. I didn't really know what to do next. I was still kind of in shock about what had happened, and I was still in a lot of pain. So I made my way down to the studio here and explained to you all what happened. And, thankfully you all got me the help that I needed. And I got to the hospital and got my shoulder looked at. And so, it's from there on, I guess it's history. This is around the same time, the exact same time where a lot of the racial climate on college campuses nationwide was at an all-time high. You could cut the tension on campus with a butter knife because of things that were going on at Mizzou University. This type of atmosphere spread, throughout college campuses everywhere. I was on the phone a couple days earlier before this actually happened, explaining to someone about how rough things felt. And this is also around the same time where, if you are familiar with the social act Yik Yak, the socially anonymous app, people were saying all types of terrible things about what was going on, talking about black people, about how black people aren't really welcome on campus. And we actually got some sort of threat that was issued saying black people don't come to class this day or don't go on campus this day. A lot of these things are going on. And I was on the phone on one day on the bus a couple days before the interview. And I was explaining to someone on the phone about how things felt and how just off things were in the looks and the stares. This white guy in front of me had turned around and said that I was pretty much just making it all up. And I'm not sure if I can use language on this show, but he said, "You're pretty much pulling this out of your ass right now." And I didn't agree with that at all. So we got into a verbal altercation on the bus. And then 2 days later, I get assaulted on the way to do an interview on the racial climate. So I think that I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
On this campus, on Indiana University's campus, when anything really happens that is potentially dangerous or a situation occurs where people need to be aware, there is something sent out called an IE Notify. We've gotten IU notifies from in the past from everything from potentially dangerous situations like robbings or theft to gas leaks. But when I was assaulted and the two people who assaulted me were on the run, essentially, there was nothing sent out to students. No one knew what was going on. A lot of my friends had to figure out what was going on through social media. I really took that as a slap in the face because the reason why people, non-people of color, particularly don't believe that we are facing these types of oppression is because they lack the visibility that they need to be seen outwardly by people who don't look like us. So, of course, whoever the guy's name in front of me doesn't believe that black people are oppressed on college campuses, he doesn't know that I was just assaulted.
Well, some of them don't want to believe it.
Exactly. A lot of them don't want to believe it. They'd rather live in their fairy tale world where if it doesn't concern them, it's not a problem. After that incident, there was a committee formed around improving the racial climate on campus. And I can't say that the incident that I was a part of was something that led directly to that, but I know that it was one of the situations that added to the necessity of a committee like that. Through that, there was several town hall meetings held with the provost, where people of color, black students, members of the LGBTQ community came and told, you know, the provost, this is how we feel. This is, you know, why aren't things happening here the way we need them to be? You know, moving forward, it gave me a different type of perspective to look at when it comes to the importance of issues like that and, you know, the role that we can all play in making sure the changes that we need happen.
Moving forward, is it going to be social activism or a career as a stand-up comic, or are you going to merge the two, say, along the lines of, say, D.L. Hughley or Dick Gregory?
When it comes to my comedy or any of my work, I like to take the approach that you can merge it with anything. Comedy can be the entree, but sometimes it can also be the side dish. Sometimes it could also be the dessert. Humor as an art form is an underlying method to which something can be accentuated. A lot of my comedy is political satire or social satire, or it has to do with things that affect us as black people or people of color. So I have a joke that does actually pretty well about white privilege. Okay, so the joke is like this. And for the listeners, I'm not sure how this is going to work because this is my first time performing it without a crowd. But okay, so I usually I say that, you know, one of the things that I feel like is kind of difficult to get people to understand is concepts that affect us as black people, that and explaining that to people who aren't black. And one of the things I have trouble getting across the most is white privilege. And usually there's a huge long silence and I say, oh, this room got really, really quiet. And so I pick out someone in the crowd. I'm like, okay, is there any white people in the crowd today? Any white folk in the crowd? And I pick out the whitest looking person I could find. And I do ask them if they are white because I don't want to judge. But most of the time they are white. So most of the time they are white. I say, okay, so me and you, the white person that I'm speaking to, we're gonna do an experiment right now to prove the white privilege exists. So me and you are going to have a foot race to the back wall and back. And the back wall, does anyone in the audience know what the back wall represents? And they shout out random things. And is it food? Is it happiness? No, it's not any of those things. It's the American dream. It's the opportunity. It's the success. It's the thing that we're all fighting for and pushing for. So I say, okay, me and you are gonna have a race. And when I say go, we're gonna race to that wall. But when I say go, you get a 400-year head start. On your mark, get set, go. And I just stand still and freeze in place. And, you know, you two didn't laugh, but usually the crowd does.
Now, is this like a nervous laughter, or do you feel like there was this connection that, yeah, I get it?
For me, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Even if it's nervous laughter, even if there's a connection, even if there's no laughter, the idea is already implanted in your mind.
Right.
That this is something that exists, and we just use something as trivial as a race to the wall and back to prove that it exists using math.
That was comedian Rob Sherrill talking with William Jose and Clarence Boone of WFHB's Bring It On. To hear the full interview, go to WFHB.org.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally, at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Do you ever use Google? Do you have a Google account? If so, watch out. Some really sophisticated crooks are flooding the internet with fake emails that use the Google Docs app to take over your computer, and a lot of people are falling for it. You get an email which looks absolutely real and legitimate, a perfect replica of what Google sends out, and it appears to come from somebody you know, saying they have shared a Google Doc with you. This application lets two people or a group see a document and make changes to it, much like passing a piece of paper around a conference table. If you click on the link, it takes you to a real Google login page, and after you log in or create an account, you're asked to give permission for an app called Google Docs to access your email. But if you click on that, you're screwed, or rather, your computer is, and maybe your friends, too. That's because the first thing it does is send out similar emails that look like they came from you to everyone in your contact database, all your friends and business associates. But then it gets even scarier. If you use your Google account or Google email to deal with other sites, as your login ID or recovery email, getting login codes or whatever, the bad guys can hack those, too. Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Twitter accounts are just some of those that could be at risk. If you get an email from anyone involving Google Docs, the safest thing to do is just delete it. If you think it might be real, get in touch with the person who apparently sent it to you by phone, text, or email, or walking into the next room, if that'll do it, before you click on anything. And if you've already fallen for this, you can't get back any data that's been stolen, but you can stop the thing in its tracks. Log into your account at Google, click on Sign In and Security, then choose Connected Apps and look at the list. Delete anything you don't recognize, and then change your password. In fact, anyone who's fallen for this scam should change their passwords all around and seriously consider setting up two-factor identification on their various online accounts if it's available. That's where the website sends you a login code in an email or text message when you put in your ID and password, and you have to enter that code to finish logging in. That adds a whole new level of security and really puts a roadblock in front of hackers. It's actually a pretty good idea for all your accounts these days. This Google phishing fleet was just recently launched, so spread the word to your friends and family, and don't get hooked yourself. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton and Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by the crew of Bring It On.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer, Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Brown County Hour, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.